want us in our minds to go along one Sunday morning to the church in Rome. And sitting there is Alex. Alex grew up in a Jewish home. Ever since Alex was a child, he has made a really, really big effort, just as Mark's been speaking about, to be distinct from the world, to stand out. And one of the ways that Alex has tried to stand out is with food. You see, Alex wants to be just like the godly Jews from the Old Testament. So he stays away from pork. He stays away from meat that has been offered to idols. He stays away from any sort of meat that hasn't been slaughtered in exactly the right way. Alex is serious about living for God. In fact, he's so serious that when he goes to the market, he sees all of the meat and he thinks to himself, I don't know where this has come from. I don't know for sure that it hasn't been offered to idols or it's been slaughtered in the right way. So I'm just going to stay clear. Just in case Alex eats something that he doesn't want to, here is a man who is willing to stick to vegetables for the rest of his life. So that's Alex. Then there's Barry. Barry comes from a Gentile background. In Barry's house, you eat whatever you want. There is no such thing as clean animals and unclean animals. And whenever Barry became a Christian, well, he heard all about the Old Testament, all about the laws about food. But he also learned these laws in the Old Testament are pointing forward to Jesus. And because Jesus has fulfilled these laws, Christians are free to eat anything they want. That's Alex and Barry. Now, I want you to imagine this Sunday morning, you go to the church in Rome, and it turns out, after the service, there's a church lunch. And there's Alex with his plate of salad. And he's happy enough until he looks across the room and he sees Barry. And there's Barry with a smile on his face and a huge bacon body. Two men, they both want to please God. They both want to stand out. They're very similar in many ways. And yet, can you imagine what they must be thinking? Alex looks at Barry and he thinks to himself, isn't that awful? I can't believe that he would compromise like that. He's eating exactly the same foods that non-Christians eat. Is he really so scared to be different? And Barry, he looks at Alex and he thinks, that man is stuck in the past. I just wish that man would be a bit less uptight. Potentially, that's a very serious situation. Here we have two men, they're part of the same church family, and Alex is judging Barry, and Barry is screwing up his nose at Alex. Now, Romans 14, we're not given names, we're not given exact details, but something like that seems to have been happening. We see in verses 1 to 4, some people say a Christian can eat any meat he wants. But others say, I can't believe that someone would call himself a Christian and still eat meat. That's not the only issue. There's a second disagreement in the church in Rome. It's in verses 5 and 6. Again, it's probably a difference between those who grew up Jewish and those who grew up Gentile, someone like Alex, was brought up to celebrate the special days from the Old Testament. Let me just point out, we're not talking here about the Lord's Day, about Sunday. There was never any debate whatsoever in the early church about that. All of the Christians kept one day a week special. But what we are talking about is the festival days from the Old Testament. Days like the Feast of Tabernacles. These extra days that were separate from the Sabbath. Days when the Jews would get together and they would worship. And you have Christians like Alex. And they think it's really important that we keep these days. We should want to meet together and worship God. And then you have Christians like Barry. And they think the most important thing is that you celebrate the Lord's Day, Sunday. And if you want to, yeah, you can celebrate all of these other days. But if you don't want to, that's fine. That's how the Jews worshipped God before Jesus came. But now things are different. And you can maybe imagine the sorts of problems that that causes. Because Alex, he can look at Barry and he can think to himself, that Barry fella, he's not very spiritual. He doesn't want to worship God. And Barry, he can look at Alex and he can think, he's a bit confused, isn't he? He just doesn't understand that we're free to make our own choices. And you can imagine this Roman church. There's Alex, and he's angry because other Christians, as far as he's concerned, aren't standing out. They're giving in to the world. And then you've got Christians like Barry, and he's totally fed up because he thinks he's being looked down on. As you can see, we have a mess on our hands. I want you to imagine that it's your job to sort it out. What would you do? I think if it was me, what I would maybe say is this. I'd say, look, Barry is right, Alex is wrong. Problem solved. But it's interesting that as the Holy Spirit leads Paul to write this chapter, that's not what he does. He's wiser than that. He knows that if Paul does that, that's going to sort out this issue, but the battle's just going to move on to something else. So instead of doing that, Paul gives us a principle. He gives us something we can remember no matter what disagreement we face. And I hope you agree that that is much better. Because it means this chapter helps us with the issues we face today. It helps us when one Christian says, you should never, ever drink alcohol. And another Christian says, well, it's fine to drink as long as you don't go too far. It helps us when one Christian says, women should always wear skirts when they go to church. And another one says, it's their choice. Whatever disagreement we face, we can take these words and we can apply it to the issue. Now, before we move on to the principle, there's two things I want us to get straight. First of all, we're talking here about issues which God has not clearly addressed in the Bible. That's what Paul means in verse 1 when he says, disputable matters. So for example, verses 5 to 8. we're not talking about the weekly Sabbath, because that is something God has clearly commanded. We're not talking today about a Christian who says, it's okay if I help myself to the money in the till, or it's okay if I sleep with my girlfriend. If the Bible gives us a clear command, well then, in one way, this passage doesn't apply. We're talking here about issues where one Christian says yes, one Christian says no, and the Bible doesn't clearly say who is right. Second thing, Paul talks here about the strong and the weak. Want to just define what he means by that? The strong is someone like Barry, someone who eats everything. The weak is someone like Alex, someone who says that a Christian should stay away from meat. That doesn't mean, by the way, that one is a better Christian than the other. What it does mean is that someone like Alex hasn't yet fully worked out the implications of what it means to be a Christian. I'm sure in any church there are strong and there are weak, and yet no matter what side you fall on, this principle applies to how you treat other Christians. Verse 1 gives us the principle in a nutshell. It tells us we are to accept him whose faith is weak. And so this morning we want to see three reasons why we're to accept other Christians whenever we disagree. So first of all, accept him because God accepts him. I think this verse is saying we're not simply to accept someone so we can turn them into a project to work on. We're not simply to accept them and then try to make them just like us. Paul says in verse 1, accept him whose faith is weak without passing judgment on disputable matters. Accept him completely. Don't accept him just as long as he becomes like you. Don't accept him, but not quite as much as you accept those who you agree with. Accept him without passing judgment. And the reason for that is in verse 3. The end of the verse. God tells him, don't condemn this man because God has accepted him. In other words, when you see this believer, try to look at him in the same way that God looks at him. Whenever you see another Christian and he's buying a bottle of wine and you don't drink, ask yourself, how does God see this person? Or whenever you come to church and there's another Christian and he is disgusted because you come to church and you're not wearing your Sunday best, ask yourself, what does God see when he sees this person? Does he see some second class past it fuddy-duddy, or does he see someone whom Jesus died to save? I think it's a very profound thing for Paul to say. I mean, can you imagine? God looks at someone and he says, I accept this man. And then I look at him and I say, he's just a second-class Christian. What am I doing? Well, I'm saying my standard is more important than what God has to say. In fact, I'm even saying, I am holier than God. We try to see someone as God sees him. It's a principle that helps us whenever we disagree. I think it also helps us in all sorts of situations. Is there another Christian who really, for some reason, gets on your nerves? Well, tell yourself, here is someone who God looks at and he loves. Is there another Christian, maybe even someone here, and you find it really hard to hold a conversation? Say to yourself, here is someone who God has brought into his family. This passage is great, I think, partly because it's so realistic. It tells us the church isn't like some fairy tale where everyone gets along, everyone's happy all of the time. It tells us the church isn't like a cult where everybody is 100% the same. Yet it's a passage that tells us, because of Jesus, someone like Alex, who would normally cross the road if he sees Barry on the same side, someone like Alex, someone like Barry, can be brothers because of Jesus. They can love each other because of Jesus. Who else but Jesus could take young people and old people and single and married and uptight and easygoing and mould them all into one loving family? This is a passage that tells us how great Jesus is and how wonderful the church is that he has redeemed. It's a passage that I think should make us look at the church. We should see the differences between different members, and we should give thanks that because of Jesus, we're part of the same group in the first place. So that first principle, accept your brother because God accepts him. Let me just say, before I move on, if there is another believer and you hold a grudge against him, well, you need to resolve it. You need to resolve it because God says so in this chapter, but you also need to resolve it because if you don't, then you're going against the work that Jesus came to earth to do. He came to make us one. So accept him because God accepts him. Secondly, accept him because he's trying to please God. Accept him because he's trying to please God. Thinking back to Alex and Barry, two men, they do very different things, and yet they act from the same motive. Alex is convinced that if he avoids meat and if he celebrates these extra days, then God is going to be pleased. And Barry, on the other hand, is convinced that if he celebrates his Christian freedom, then God will be pleased by that. And it's the same today in the church. One man thinks to himself, TV is full of filth, and so God is going to be pleased if I just don't have one. And then another man, well, he thinks some TV programs are good. They show the creative nature that God has given us. And if we watch that, and if we enjoy that, and if we give God the glory for what we see, well, then he's going to be happy. Or another man He thinks alcohol is evil. And another man thinks alcohol is a gift from God, if it's enjoyed in the right way. We're different. So Paul gives us some helpful advice in verses 5 to 8. First of all, verse 5, he says, each man should be fully convinced in his own mind. If you think it's okay for you to watch TV, buy a TV. And if you don't think it's okay, don't have one. If you think it's fine to have a glass of wine with your dinner, that's okay. But if you think it's wrong, don't have one. Paul is saying here, and he says it in even more detail in the next section, follow your own conscience. But he's also saying, as you do that, try to realize that others are doing the same thing. Whenever Alex eats his plate of lettuce, he does it because of his conscience. And whenever Barry eats meat, he does it because he's thought this issue through and he believes that's all right. Paul tells us in verse 6, he who eats meat eats to the Lord. He who abstains does so to the Lord. And that's helpful for us to remember. Think about the state of this world that we live in. You just have to spend one morning driving, and you know that most people only want to please themselves. So isn't it refreshing? We have in these verses two different types of people, very different from each other, and yet each one is focused on pleasing God. Alex, if he wanted to, could please himself by enjoying some meat. But he doesn't, because he wants to please God. And Barry, he could be totally caught up in trying to please others and impress them, people like Alex. But he doesn't. The only thing that matters to him is that he pleases God. And so, when you see a fellow believer and you disagree, there's some disputable matter, something that's just not clear, and you have different opinions, you should look at that believer, and rather than saying to yourself, isn't it terrible that he does those things, say to yourself, isn't it great? Here is a brother in Christ who is trying his best to please God. Accept him because he's trying to please God. And then our third point, accept him because you're not the judge. Accept him because you're not the judge. Again, let me just repeat myself. Verse 1, Paul talks about disputable matters. That's what we're referring to here. There are some occasions when Christians are to judge. For example, sometimes whenever a Christian is doing something that's wrong, the elders of the church need to step in. That's their responsibility. But leaving that aside, I want you to imagine a prison cell. There's half a dozen prisoners inside this cell. And one by one, the door opens, a guard walks in, and he takes a prisoner away. he takes them to a courtroom. And in that courtroom, a judge announces a verdict and a sentence. I want you to imagine one of the prisoners in that cell breaks free. He runs past the guard, he runs down the corridor, he runs into the courtroom, he jumps into the judge's chair, he points at one of the prisoners in the dock, and he says, "Guilty." Well, that would be ridiculous. Because here is a man who needs to know his place. He needs to know, I am not the judge. Rather, I am someone who is going to be judged. And Paul says here, verse 9, Christ is Lord of both the dead and the living. Jesus is the judge. And so he says in verse 10, why then do you judge your brother? Why do you look down on your brother? Paul is saying here, when there's a disagreement in the church, know your place. You are not the judge. You're in the dock. And we need to know, as Paul tells us in verse 12. And this will help us when it comes to disagreement. On the day of judgment, when you stand before God, God is not going to say to you, why did you let Johnny do the things that he did? He is going to say, what did you do? And why did you do it? And that means, rather than looking around, rather than getting caught up with the faults of other people's, or of others, we need to look at ourselves. Because God is going to judge us. And whenever that day comes, well, what are you going to do? Are you going to say, or try to say, well, I'm not as bad as this other person who went to my church? Because that's not going to work. Because God says in verse 12, each of us will give an account of himself to God. So what are you going to say when that day arrives? This passage is uncomfortable. In one way, it's never nice to see disagreements in the church, and yet it's a passage that gives us great hope. Paul gives us this great principle for dealing with disagreement. And yet, Paul also tells us, it's not his focus, but he tells us who is right in this situation and who is wrong. It's pretty clear from the passage. Paul thinks that someone like Alex, who only eats vegetables, has got it wrong. He hasn't fully understood. He is weak. And yet, the lovely thing about this passage is that Alex is completely accepted by God. Verse 4 tells us, whenever someone like Alex comes before God, his master, the Lord himself, is able to make him stand. That shows us God does not expect us to be perfect. We should be perfect. It's right that we aim to be perfect, but God knows that we have sin. And yet, even someone, maybe someone like some of us, who has weak faith, who doesn't fully understand, who hasn't worked everything out, someone like us can come to God, and in verse 4, God will make him stand. There's hope for us. And there's hope for other Christians. when we get it wrong and we let ourselves down. Because this passage shows us it's not down to our effort. If we have faith, even if it is weak faith, God Himself will make us stand. So when there's a disagreement in the church, look at your fellow believer, recognize that this is a brother, and recognize that God, by His grace, is going to make him stand and is going to accept him into heaven. And recognize that if you have faith, God is going to do the same with you. And the time is going to come when we meet together in heaven, when we put these disagreements behind us, and when we celebrate the fact that God has accepted us, and that through Jesus He has made us one, and He has enabled us to spend time with Him, rejoicing with each other for all of eternity. It's going to be a great day, but let us live now in the church with each other as if we're getting ready for that day. Let us live as far as we can help it, like we're going to live in heaven. When there's a disagreement, accept one another.